ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
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 So, the other day I started to read from second canto, third chapter. I read the first 10 verses. Out of them, first 7 verses actually describe about the futility of demigod worship and other kinds of mundane endeavors that sometimes go on in the name of spiritual life. And then it came to the point that the ultimate goal of life is to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead for the sake of your devotional service. And then we discussed about that no matter in whichever condition one may be in, whether he is full of desire or whether he is free from desire, or whether he is desire of liberation, all kinds of people should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead with intense devotional service. Is it clear? So this is the sum and substance of spiritual understanding. Sometimes people think that performing karmakanda is a goal of life. Elevation to the heavenly planet by performing sacrifices and austerities is the goal of life. Sometimes people think that to worship demigods in order to fulfill their desires is the goal of life. And actually that is going on. In the name of spiritual life, all these activities are going on. But Srimad Bhagavatam actually points out that. No, that's not the goal of life. And Srimad Bhagavatam proves also, very systematically, very practically, how these activities are not the goal of life. Why? Because those activities are temporary. One may perform all kinds of demigod worships, and as a result of that, they do get some material benefit. But those material benefits are only short-lasting. And those material benefits are irrelevant. In one hand they are short-lasting, and on the other hand they are irrelevant. Short-lasting because, like, one may become very rich, but after getting all this wealth, he doesn't really become fully satisfied. So wealth does not really solve all our... Wealth doesn't give us permanent happiness. And because, say, one may get some wealth thinking that he is going to enjoy. But then he is going to enjoy with his wife and family. But then his wife dies. So then the purpose of getting the wealth is lost. He thinks that he will enjoy with the money that he earned with his wife and children. Now wife dies and children become drug addicts. So this wealth doesn't actually give him happiness. They may bring in certain number of happiness, certain degree of happiness for some time, but not for all. That's one thing. And irrelevant because one may get all the wealth, but if he is suffering from, say, he thinks that he is going to enjoy with his wealth. He gets all his wealth, but then all of a sudden he's detected a cancer. Now what can he do with all his wealth? All that he thought that he would do with his wealth is all nipped in the bud. Because now his body is not able to enjoy all this. So material pleasure in this way is temporary and irrelevant. And then elevation to the heavenly planets. He may be elevated to the heavenly planets and he may be there for some time. But then... Khine punne martyalokam vishyanti. When his piety is exhausted, he falls down to the earth, to be subjected to birth, death, old age and disease. Yes, in the heavenly planet there is no birth, death, old age and disease. There is, but the thing is that the situation in the heavenly planets is only short-lasting, only temporary, only relevant for as long as one has the piety. The piety is something like subtle wealth. Just as gross wealth is money, piety is subtle wealth. One may not have money, but he can fulfill his desires. Actually, wealth is the means to fulfill one's desires. With the wealth, one can buy what he wants. Now, if one has piety, he can fulfill his desire. Sometimes we find that somebody desires something and it's very easily fulfilled. We have to understand that he has a lot of piety. So, this piety is something like wealth. Now, when you have wealth, you can just go to some place and have a lot of fun. But when your wealth is finished, then what happens? Say you go to Las Vegas, where people go to get fun. So he takes all his money and he lives in a very posh hotel. He has all the facilities there. He is enjoying, apparently. Then he goes to a casino and begins to gamble. And while gambling, he loses all his money. Then can he stay in Las Vegas anymore? No. He'll have to leave Las Vegas and go somewhere else. So in this way, with our intelligent probing, we can see that all these enjoyments are temporary. All these enjoyments don't really bear any lasting significance. But that is not the case with Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness is everlasting. In Krishna consciousness, there is no loss or there is no diminution. In Krishna consciousness, whatever wealth you have acquired, it will remain you. Because it is not with the temporary material body or both gross and subtle. The acquiring of Krishna consciousness is with the spirit soul. Therefore, it always remains with the spirit soul. When one gives up Krishna consciousness, then he may lose the benefit of this spiritual advancement when he drifts away. But when he comes back to Krishna consciousness, he is again subjected to the assets that he has acquired in Krishna consciousness. It never is wasted, it's never lost. And on top of everything, when one becomes Krishna conscious, then Krishna takes control of him. And Krishna takes care of him in all respects. So, anyway, then I'll go to a relevant verse. These are all, I'll just read through a few verses to give you an idea how it is being established that material endeavor, materialistic endeavor, are only temporary. So, verse 17 is describing, I'll just read the English, both by rising and setting, the sun decreases the duration of life of everyone, except one, who utilizes the time by discussing topics of the all-good personality of Godhead. to ordinary people, to people in general, what is happening with the rising and setting of the sun, his lifespan is stolen away. He's losing every day. As the day passes, his duration of life is reducing, diminishing. Ayur haroti boi pumsham uddan nastang cha jannasau tasarte jat kshano nita uttama shloka bartaya. But those who are engaged in uttama shloka bartaya, their life is not affected by the rising and setting of the sun. Because they have already situated on the eternal time. For them, death and birth is irrelevant. It's only a matter of changing body. Because he is situated in a spiritual identity. Therefore, he is simply situated in his eternal life. Therefore, for him, the rising and setting of the sun is simply an opportunity to become engaged in the service of Krishna. And then Shukadeva Goswami is making a few examples. Do the trees not live? Do the bellows of the blacksmith not breathe? All around us, do the beasts not eat and discharge semen? So, people think that the goal of life is to live and live by breathing and going through material enjoyment. But here he is making a point that doesn't a tree live? Doesn't a billow breathe? Billow, blacksmiths, billow, you have seen that? It seems as if it's breathing, pumping air in and out. Now those who are not engaged in Krishna's service, their existence is like that. They're breathing without any purpose. They're living without any objective. And eating and discharging semen, even the animals do that. So why should human life be for the sake of only these activities? So he is making the point that human life is meant for a higher purpose. And what is the higher purpose? That has already been discussed by him. The higher objective, the higher purpose of human life is to be engaged in loving devotional service to Krishna. So unless and until one is engaged in that activity, unless and until one is engaged in devotional service to Krishna, his existence is simply like that of a tree. His breathing, which is the symptom of life, is simply the breathing of a blacksmith's bellow. And his eating and sleeping and other activities are simply like that of an animal. Then he is pointing out the goal of life is to chant the... then he is making some very nice point here. Okay, I'll just read these two verses, the translation. He's saying the eyes which do not look at the symbolic representations of the personality of Godhead, his forms, names, qualities, etc., are like those printed on the plumes of the peacock. And the legs which do not move to the holy places where the Lord is remembered are considered to be like tree trunks, unable to move. The person who has not at any time received the dust of the feet of the Lord's pure devotee upon his head is certainly a dead body. And the person who has never experienced the aroma of the tulasi leaves from the lotus feet of the Lord is also a dead body, although breathing. Certainly the heart is still framed which, in spite of one's chanting the holy name of the Lord with concentration, does not change when ecstasy takes place. Tears fill the eyes and the hairs stand on end. So in this way, through this chapter, the third chapter of second canto, it has been established how pure devotional service is the ultimate goal of life. And when one achieves that pure devotional service, it has to be considered that his life has been successful. Those who receive this devotional service, they must remember that this is the highest benefit that he could ever derive from his existence. He should consider that this is the most precious wealth that he could ever achieve. Therefore, he must take full advantage. Hare Krishna, does anybody have any question?
You mentioned that with the rising and setting of the sun, the life of the average people, it sort of decreases. And you also mentioned about speaking about the glories of the pastimes of Krishna. When you speak the glories of pastimes of Krishna, that's like where the eternal time. So,
I didn't mean that. What I actually meant is that when one becomes situated in devotional service, and what's the difference between a devotee and a non-devotee? You see, a non-devotee is not engaged in service to Krishna. A non-devotee is engaged only in his sense gratification. Right? All their activities are simply motivated by sense gratification. For them, their ayu, their lifespan, is being stolen away with the rising and setting. Whereas a person who has become engaged in devotional service, he has transcended that bodily platform. The lifespan is relative to the body. The soul doesn't have any lifespan. The soul is eternal. Therefore, for him, there is no question of his life is being stolen away. He will change his body. Devotee also will change his body. But for him it's a matter of only changing his body. He is not being affected by the changing of body. Whereas, for a non-devotee, death means the end of everything. But that's not the case with a devotee. For a devotee, death is not important. It's only a matter of changing his body. That is the point. Yes?
In the same context, you said that devotees were in...
Uttama Shloka Vartaya. Uttama Shloka Vartaya means the personality who is glorified, glorifying the personality who is glorified by select verses. Uttama means the best, and Shloka means prayers. The personality who is glorified by the best and selected prayers. Who is that? Who is glorified by most wonderful glorification? Krishna. Yeah.
Like in the material world, there's just a small percentage of people who are devotee. And devotee, the natural tendency is like to feel a lot of compassion. And we see, like with the philosophy we encounter, we know like there is this person suffering so much and so much, and you know, like sort of engrossed with the material and mundane level of things, and we feel the compassion for them to understand what we know, and that's not right, and you know this is right, and we encounter a lot of sometimes they get agitated, but devotees normally like do it out of sincere compassion for them, because we know that's not the real happiness, and it's not like we don't plan it. We just, or sometimes we sort of choose to just say, you know, like we in the dilemma as to whether we should tell them or not tell them, because it's going to agitate them. So how do we make a decision when when to help and when not to help, and at the same time we are feeling that compassion to change that person's perspective on life.
You see, a devotee, a preacher, is like an expert doctor. You see, how does a doctor give them a prescription? How does a doctor prescribe medicine? Through, according to the symptom. Similarly, a devotee gives Krishna consciousness according to the need and ability of the person to receive it. So it, that's why it's very, it has, it's a personal thing. Sometimes he will give him direct Krishna consciousness, sometimes he'll give him indirect. For example, when Narad Muni met King Prachinabarhi, went to King Prachinabarhi, the father of the Prachetas, who was completely absorbed in Karmakanda activity. So Narad Muni just gave him, told him a story of Puranja. And through that story, he aroused the interest in him. What do you mean? If straight away Narad Muni saw that if he told him straight away, become a Krishna conscious, become a devotee, he won't be able to accept it. Therefore, in an indirect way, he gave it. Another example, when Angira Rishi went to Chitraketu. Chitraketu wanted a son. Angira Rishi said, okay, he'll get a son. But when he lost the son and was ready, then only Narad Muni and Angira Rishi gave him Krishna consciousness. So in this way, a devotee is an expert executor or teacher who teaches a student according to student's ability to understand. Or he is a doctor who gives the medicine according to the person's disease. In sense that, therefore, you see, I mean, it's preaching is an art. Preaching is an art, and a devotee is very expert in that. The more advanced he is, more expert he is.
So, the modes in the material nature is relevant to the person's body, and it's a scientific, you've got to have a proper scientific understanding of how, to identify which mode and then sort of do your planning and...
Right. Seeing the need of the person, how he's going to be affected. Like therefore to somebody, he will say, okay, go ahead and make a lot of money. And to some other person, he will say, give up all your money. So he's not saying the same thing to everybody. He's directing them according to the person's mental makeup. As you were saying, the mode he's in, accordingly his mentality has been developed. His consciousness is a product of his karmic background. And accordingly he advises.
That's why Guru Maharaj is so important to us. We have to hold on to your lotus feet because for all that direction, because you are the most qualified person to sort of pick up the symptoms and direct us accordingly.
And I pray to Krishna that I can properly direct you all. Any other question? Yes, then.
Just have one question with regards to the demigods. Do we just have to recognize them? Or because when you mentioned that it's sufficient to just pray straight, but then, what about also the point of going through his devotee?
Yeah. Good point. You see, demigods are like the departmental heads. Say, in the society, in a normal condition, in a state affair or a city, you find that there are different departments and there are different heads. Like there is, you know, water department, electric department, education department, and there are different heads who are actually taking care of the supply of those things, necessities of life. And then a law-abiding citizen, he is meant to pay the bills in the form of tax or regular bills. So when he does that, his supply is uninterrupted. So normally one has to do that. He has the facilities that he is getting, he must pay. Right. But then somebody becomes an employee of the city. Right? When he becomes the employee of the city, then you see he doesn't have to pay any more electric bill or water supply bill or education tax. Because he is working for the city itself, those things are already taken care of. He lives in a house where all these facilities are provided. Because he is working for the city. Now, similarly, the demigods are like those departmental heads of the different departments of the city. And surrendering to Krishna is something like taking employment of the city authority. So then you don't have to worry about all that. Because you are engaged in serving the city provides you with all the facilities. You don't have to separately take care of that. Any other question? Yes, Rajashekhar.
You know how the time changes, right? We have summer, winter, and autumn. And also in Bhagavad Gita, it is said that time is meant to be eternal. So how are we to understand the eternality of time when we see the times are constantly changing?
Yeah. Time is not changing. Seasons are changing. Time is eternal. Time is flowing. And all these changes are taking place in relation to time. Just as your body is changing in relation to time. Right? Time is eternal. It is our perception that makes the time limited. Like from our perspective, the time has past, present and future. In relation to our perspective. But the time is flowing eternally. Time is eternal. It's an energy of Krishna. But our perception of time may change. But then again, time is eternal in the spiritual sky. In the material nature, the time also is temporary. In the material nature, the time manifestation of time is in the form of Krishna's glands, Mahavishnu's glands. It's the Mahavishnu's glands that is manifest in the form of Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva is Mahakal, the time. Okay. But in spiritual sky, so in the material nature, time is fragmented in past, present and future. But that again is in relation to us. In the material nature, everything is relative to us, our perception. Whereas in the spiritual sky, everything is in relation to Krishna's perception. Therefore, in spiritual sky, time is eternal. In the material nature, time is constantly moving. In the spiritual nature, time doesn't move. How is that? We can't figure out. Nahi brajati jatrapi samaya. In the spiritual sky, time doesn't move. Nimeshardhak hoga. Even for a half of a fraction, half of a wink of an eyelid. Nimesha. Ardha. Half of that time doesn't move. Whereas here, time is constantly moving. Okay, thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gold.